My name is Robin, and I am powerless, powerless, powerless over alcohol. I'm very grateful to be here, and I'm even more honored and humbled by the fact that you asked me back. Of course, it wasn't you people in this room. I mean, a few of you, but it was, usually. You know, Robin back in the old days, he was never asked back anywhere. In fact, everywhere Robin went, the doors would slam, the shades would be drawn, the shutters would clang, and the keep moving asshole sign would be posted. So it was really, I thought this is a first, Of course, it probably isn't, but I'd like to think it is. That someone gets asked back to one of these conventions, roundups, conferences, whatever. So it's really great being here, and I'd like to thank Mark and Jim, and of course, Joe started it all. And that was the first time I'd ever spoke at one of these things. And it's been going ever since, and I was telling Joe, I don't think he's heard me since then, and I said, Joe, be advised, my higher power, who does all the talking for me, I never prepare anything, he's gotten leaner and meaner, and he really kicks ass, so watch it. One of the things that I remember most is that, I try to remember most anyway, is that I'm here to, give you my take on an unbelievable, indescribable program known as Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the first things that was pounded into my thick skull was that honesty was of the utmost importance. In fact, it was so important, it was mentioned three times in the first paragraph of How It Works. So they said, Robin, whatever you do, wherever you go, if you haven't walked the walk, try not to talk the talk. And of course, every time I say this, I put my big foot in my mouth. Because now I got to tell that woman over there that when I came in, she says, oh my, you have such beautiful natural black hair. And I said, thank you, yes. It's called Preference by L'Oreal, and that's it. Comes in a bottle, and I'm not ready to be gray yet. Of course, at this stage, I think it would be pretty much white, not gray, so. And tonight I had to do a hell of a job with the mascara brush to get the roots, that were showing. And then I use the tighteners and everything. If I smile, my face is going to crack, it's tough being 39 years old. Okay, Robin took his first drink. This is my drunk log. Okay, listen real fast because it's going to go pretty quick. Robin took his first drink when he was 14, his last drink when he was 45. It was downhill all the way. In fact, it was a grease toboggan ride straight to the pits of hell with me pouring Indian champagne on it all the way down. Now, you want to know what Indian champagne is? Of course you want to know what Indian champagne is. And even if you don't want to know, I'm going to tell you anyway. So, Indian champagne is a nice word for white port wine. And the stuff I used, don't light a match when you open that one because it'll blow up right in your face. Never saw a grape in its life. It's pure chemical. What do you expect for 39 cents a quart, But anyway, that's the story. You can call it anything you want. For me, it was a leave of absence from the human race. That's a good one, Jesus, because I don't... When I came crawling through those doors the last time around with my ass dragging so low, it was wiping out my footsteps. I didn't know anything. I was walking into walls and everything else. 10 years on Skid Row can take its toll. We're not talking hours, days, months, we're talking years. And so when I came crawling through those doors the last time around, I was a 145-pound skeleton, the most beautiful color of gray. That's why I wore this shirt tonight, to kind of show you what the color was like. No, it's this light one down here. Yeah, okay. And anyway, if I turned a corner real fast and ran into some kids, they'd scream and run because they thought I was a walking corpse. And I weigh 200 now, people. It was 145 then. And it was kind of sad, because I remember those 10 years down there on the Skid Row. I'd love to tell you that every moment that I was down there, I was trying to figure out how I was going to get out of this situation, what I was going to do to get out of that mess. You know, sleeping under the docks covered with newspapers, abandoned trailers, stairwells, dumpsters. It gets kind of messy, because in case no one has told you, they don't have plumbing facilities in those refined places, And so, I mean, when you're out there and you have accidents and all kinds of things happen, I mean, it can get pretty messy. Look at them. They're thinking, what in the hell were these people thinking about having the nerve to ask a wino to come down here and talk to us at our banquet after we've eaten this luscious meal and everything else, and we're sitting here all clean and sparkly and shiny, and the wings are fluttering, the halos are just glowing, I can see them. How dare them ask that up there to come down here and talk to us? Don't they know that we come from higher places? Can't they see that? You know, I've heard this before, and I'm just going to tell you something real quick. I'm going to tell you real quick what your high places are all about. And it's very simply this. We are all from the same street. We just came from different addresses. We all rode the same elevator. We just got on and off at different floors. A bottom is a bottom at whatever level you hit it. And I hope for your sake you have hit one. Because if you haven't, your ass is going out there, you know. And just in case you've forgotten, all you high and mighty, clean, beautiful people, I am going to remind you one more time. Shit, piss, and vomit smells the same in a penthouse as it does in a garbage can, all right? And don't you ever forget that, okay? Now, I said I don't talk the talk if I haven't walked the walk, and you're wondering, what's he talking about a penthouse for? He's never been in no penthouse. He's a Skid Row wino. I got news for you. I got into a couple of them, and they're sorry to this day they ever let me in. I cleaned them out, you know, but I was there, so I can talk about it. And that's history also. You know, I'd love to tell you that, I stopped counting the nut houses, jails, and institutions after the 50th time. I just stopped counting. You know, I had a sheet at the police station down in Monroe and Racine that would go around this block about three times. I mean, the best and the worst of the medical and psychiatric profession all gave up and said, this no good SOB doesn't stand a chance of a snowball in hell of ever sobering up. Let the son of a bee die, you know. Better get rid of him, because the cops wouldn't even pick me up. They'd see me, I'd be with a bunch of my buddies, winos, and they'd say, you, over there, don't even come close to us. And because I said, you're not going to mess up our paddy wagon or squad car, you just get over there and stay there, and they'd take everybody else. Then there was Mutt and Jeff, the two cops that used to really love to harass me. They carried, this is a little bit of life on the wild side on Skid Row, okay? And they used to carry kettle prods, yes. And in case you're passed out, that's a good way to wake you up. Then once they wake you up, then he used to hit me in the stomach to see if the bottle was there, or else he'd bang me in the arm, because I used to stick them in the sleeve. And I don't want you to learn any bad habits now, okay? And so he'd bind her and he'd take it away from me. Now, I've heard a lot of people talk about humiliation when they came in. You know, they were humiliated about this, humiliated about that. I'm going to describe what humiliation is really all about to you, for me anyway. He'd take that bottle, open it up, and pour it over my head. Knowing that I was standing there shaking so bad and wanting that drink so bad. And he would laugh the whole time until it was all gone. Then he'd smash the bottle over there, and I'd be standing there with the little drops falling, and I'd go, trying to catch one. That really happened, people. I'm not making that up to amuse you. You know, I'm not getting paid for this. I'm here to save my ass, you know. And if you are here, if there's anyone in this room that's here because of a relationship, a marriage, a lover or loveress, whatever you call yourselves, you know. Or to save that job or to save whatever. If it's anything other than you, you're wasting your time. And let me tell you, they told me, you know, that one of the biggest favors they did me when I first came around these rooms, and boy, that was a mess. You're lucky you weren't there. That was quite a while ago. I'd march in because I had no place left to go. I mean, like I told you, everywhere I went, they'd say, out of here, just keep moving. So I'd come to these godforsaken rooms because I knew that you'd let me sit down, you'd let me drink your nasty-ass coffee, and I could just kind of figure out, you know, well, I'll look around and say, okay, that one's good for a quarter, that one's good for a pack of cigarettes, that one will pop for a flop, I think, you know. I was serious about my sobriety in those days, you know. And so, you know, that's life on life's terms. And I was walking into walls. I didn't know whether I was coming or going or what. And you let me in. You didn't tell me to get out. The only one that would tell me was the elders every once in a while when they really get pissed off at me. They'd tell me, you know what? If you think you're in the wrong place, and if you think you're not really alcoholic or whatever, they say, there's the door. Here, better you than me. And they said, don't waste our time, and we won't waste yours. Well, let me tell you, every time Robin heard that, he'd say, hallelujah, let me out of here. And away I'd go. Down the road, they'd catch me one more time, and it'd be one more Huggy Foo jacket and one more rubber roof. That's the only way that they could stop me, was to just lock me up. They used to take me in it was called the The Bluebird was one of those old metal buses that they converted, and they used to take all the mental patients to the nut houses, Elgin, Mantino, Kankakee, all those places there in Illinois. And they took me to Elgin 12 times, and Nurse Betty would come and meet the bus when she'd see my name on the thing they had sent ahead with my name on it. And in the back, they'd taken out two seats and put one of those metal stretchers, and I was always tied down in that thing because I was always crazy as bat shit, you know. And she'd get on the bus, and she'd come in, she'd get on the bus with a hypo in her hand. She'd come over and she says, Robin, you ain't going to do what you did the last time to me. I went into DTs and hallucinations. And she'd go, bam. And then she'd say, now you can let him go, you know. And, of course, this never happened to any of you. None of you. You're all sitting there looking at me. Is this one for real or what? You know? Okay, let's do a little experiment here. Since you're looking so awestruck and everything. Just very quietly. Okay, this is called a shit maker. That's what it's good for. That's the only thing it's good for. You know, this is, you know. And it has three buttons. Stop, go, and fast forward. This is that beautiful place where nothing can go in and nothing can come out unless you allow it to. And this is where you can bring up all those beautiful feelings and descriptions and emotions and all that stuff like self-loathing, gloom, misery, despair, and, you know, lower than well you know what, and all that other good stuff. That's where it all is born, and it's nurtured, and it comes oozing out of your ears, you know. I want you to sit here and kind of clear that mess up for a little while, and then just sit there and think. Now, think. What? All of you that have never been on Skid Row don't know a thing about what I'm talking about, don't know nothing about that Skid Row between your ears, God forbid. Think. What did you, each one of you, quietly in your own head think? What did you pay for that seat that you are sitting here in tonight? Physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, forget it. What did you pay? And not only that, honest engine, what did you do? For a drink or any other mood-altering substance. Think about it. Mae West had it all right when she wrote that autobiography and called it Goodness Had Nothing to Do With It, because that describes me to the T. Goodness had nothing to do with me getting here, so it's pretty safe to say that on different levels, and some worse, some not so worse, and so on and so forth, we all didn't get here for eating too many marshmallows, okay? All right? So now that I've got you down to my level, you know, we can continue. You know, Robin came into this program, and you would think at that, you know, well, one of the things that happened, it was, I don't know what happened. It was just, I was being released from my last locked ward experience. There's no count how many of those I was in, but I was standing on a street corner outside of this place, and I had the rags I had on. I had no place to go. I didn't have 2 cents to rub together. And I said to myself, wow, 45 years on planet Earth, and what have I got to show for it? The biggest zero, zilch, nothing you ever saw. And so I'm thinking to myself, what do I do now? And that little voice, I have a little voice, I know you don't, but I have a little voice, and it says to me, Robin, there's always those rooms. And I thought, oh no, oh no. In the nut houses, they used to tie me to chairs and wheel me into your meetings that all you do-gooders used to bring into the nut house because you knew you could go back out, you know. If they were going to keep you, you wouldn't be coming around, you know. So I hated you. I hated you worse than death. Unless you gave me a cigarette, then I'd say, oh, okay, you're all right. And, but no, no, no. I fought tooth and nail against anything or anyone that would get between me and my next drink. All of you were obstacles, every one of you. If I had a machine gun at that time, I would have mowed you all down and never even blinked an eye, you know? And, you know, I don't know about what that all about because, you know, let's face it. I realize now that if anyone did to me what I did to myself, I would really kill him and never blink an eye because nobody has ever done to me what I've done to myself. Although it's so much fun to be able to say, well, if it wasn't for, and if it wasn't for my mommy, my daddy, my uncle, my this, my station in life, my blah, 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 blah. There's a thing in the program that says that 180 degree U-turn. Don't look out there for what you're carrying around right here inside of you. So if you have any questions or any answers or anything that you need, you know, it's right here or it ain't nowhere. It's right here or it ain't nowhere. One of the most beautiful things that this program gave me when I finally came around and stayed, I'd love to tell you I came in and I said, here I am, help me. Yeah, right. I said, oh, no, 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 these, I'm doomed, these rooms, these sanctimonious mothers, I'm doomed, all they can talk about is, I drank a pint, I drank a quart, I drank a gallon, I drank a week, I drank a month, I drank a year, and I sit there, I say, you know what, I haven't slept in I don't know how long, and I haven't eaten for 3 days, and you'd look at me so, benignly and just say, Robin, don't drink and go to meetings. And I say, these people are wacko. I said, but you're not listening. You're not listening. I'm in rags. I'm dirty. I stink. Everything is bad. Bad, as if they couldn't smell me. I'd be in those meetings and there'd be empty chairs all around me. And even if they wanted to help me, they couldn't because they couldn't get close to me, you know. And they'd look at me and just smile and say, Robin, don't drink and go to meetings. And I used to, the names I called you then were not nice. The names I think about calling you every once in a while today are not nice, but today I don't do it. I just think about it. Then, every time I opened my mouth, black clouds of smoke would come out, and that would be the end of everything, you know. So the bottom line was I had no place left to go, so I had to stick around. I literally had no place left to go. I'd burned every bridge, every opportunity, everything. I didn't have to worry about losing anything because I didn't have anything. That's why anything I have today and on the scale of the way society measures things, materially I would come out very low, very, very, almost to the bottom. But boy, the things that I can do today that I couldn't do then are unbelievable. So I had to just keep plugging away and... I hated everything about these rooms. I hated you people. And I just couldn't go anywhere, so I had to just play your game. And I figured one of these days I'll figure out what they do with that money, and one of these days I'm going to figure out where they hide their jugs. And I said, one of these days I'm going to find out what they're on, because they can't be all that happy. You and your smiley faces, I hated you. Oh, God, did I hate you, because I was sitting there thinking, God, where am I going to go tonight? Where am I going to do? What? I don't know how it happened, people. It happened. For me, you know, people are always running up to me. Robin, how does it work? How does it work? As if I'm supposed to know. I don't know. All I know is that I didn't drink, and here I am. And you kept telling me, keep coming back. I think that was the most miraculous thing I'd ever heard in my life. And I said, what? You said, keep coming back. No one had ever asked me to come back. No one. And here I am. It is unbelievable. This program has done for me what the best and the worst of the psychiatric and medical professions couldn't do. And again, I had, you know, Joe was talking about high bottom and all that shit, you know, but where I come from, the high bottom drunk had his head on the curb, you know, and that's about... That's about how we measured it down there. And then, of course, on the day you got your welfare check, you were king for about an hour. And then somebody would jackroll you, and that would be the end of that. You were lucky if you could get a jug out of that. And so, but it's kind of neat, because anything beats a blank. So anything I have today, whether it's a clean set of underwear or whatever, that's a plus. That's a plus in my life. You kept telling, you know, I came to these rooms and I couldn't figure out what your people were all about. I couldn't understand anything. Believe this or not, the first 2 years I did not say a word. I couldn't. I literally couldn't talk. I just sat there in total disbelief, total shock, and I just thought, I don't know. Maybe one of these days I'll wake up and this will be gone, you know. Because I really didn't understand it and I wanted no part of it. But I couldn't go anywhere else. Like I said, I weighed 145 pounds. I had a collapsed right lung. My medical record reads like a death warrant. I've been DOA a couple of times, dead on arrival. And, you know, like I told you, I stopped counting all those funny farms and institutions after the 50th time and just kept going. So... But I didn't hit the bottom of the barrel. I went straight through the bottom of the barrel, you know. And this is where the poem says, some people are sicker than others. And I was the one that was sicker than most. And for those of you that are still wondering why this wino is standing up here talking to you, I want to remind you of a little something. We talked about it a little this morning. They're called the promises. And the promises are on my side, in case you didn't know it. Because right in there it says, no matter how far down the scale you have gone, you will see how your experience can benefit others. You know, somewhere along the way you told me, or the program told me, or somebody told me, Robin, if you just don't take a drink one day at a time, read the big book, go to meetings, talk to your sponsor, you're going to know the joy of living. And I thought, what in the hell are these people talking about? I didn't know anything about any of that stuff. I spent my first year in a rehabilitation workshop. They had to teach me. Remember, 10 years on Skid Row, literally, no breaks, just 10 years. The only time I went away was when I went to a nut house. Then they dumped me back where they got me, and there I was all over again. They put me into a rehabilitation workshop the first year. And everyone had a counselor. I mean, there was every kind of disability you could think of. Some worse, some other. People were falling out. People couldn't talk. People were all like this. People were in wheelchairs. It was horrible. And I was right in there, moving and shaking with the best of them. It was wacko as hell. I was walking into walls. And my counselor would... Everyone had a counselor or whatever. And he'd meet you at the door. You had to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning. And he'd look at me and he says, Robin, you look terrible. And I said, why? My clothes would be on either inside out or upside down or something. And he'd say, you look like you slept in your clothes. And I said, well, I did. He says, you did? And I says, yes. And he says, maybe we need to talk about this. So he'd take me in his office and he says, Robin, why are you sleeping in your clothes? And I thought, boy, this guy really doesn't know anything. And I'd look at him and say, you know what? When you live on the street, day and night and everything else, you don't take your clothes off and put on your jammies, you know? If the cops come, you got to run real fast. You look pretty silly, you know, running around with no clothes on, you know? And I had to learn how to brush my teeth, how to comb my hair, how to take a bath. I took a bath before I came down here, people. That's progress. I didn't work it. I thought you'd be proud of me if I told you that. So anyway, that's the way it started. And I mean, I'd love to tell you as easy as anything. It wasn't. It was the most miserable, horrible experience I ever had in my life. Or so I thought, you know. I mean, you know, for 2 years I just kind of mumbled and stumbled. But I kept coming back, and you kept telling me just, you know, don't drink, go to meetings, and that's the whole idea. And so that's what I did. I spent an entire year in that place that showed me. Well, it was because of them that I was able to really go out into the world and function, because I was non-functional when I came in. So then from there, one day, my Department of Vocational Rehabilitation counselor called me in, and he says, Robin, he says, I think that since you've been there a year, we're going to send you to school. I looked at him in total disbelief. In fact, I remember I felt my hair just go like this. I said, what do you mean, school? It is 30 years since I graduated from high school. I have measurable brain damage. Every time they hook me up to one of those EEG machines, it blows up. And I said, 10 years on Skid Row, I said, I still don't know my rear end from a hole in the ground. And you're wanting me to go back to school. And I said, do you know any more funny stories? I mean, I was really upset. He looked at me. He didn't shrug. He didn't shake. He didn't miss a beat. He just said, okay, Robin. He says, but I'm going to tell you something. No school, no money. And I thought, when do I start, sir? Robin was not ready to go out and meet the world job-wise and all that other. It would be a long time before I did that. So I know someone here has probably played with the idea of school and talked to themselves out of it with, oh, I'm too old, I'm too sick, I have too much, like with me, got brain damage, that whole schmear. I got news for you. I did it, and I kicking and screaming and hating and resenting and daring anyone to tell me or try to help me and all that other jazz, but I went. And they put me into this Truman College, and it was built on the north side skid row there, right on the corner that I used to sleep on. This is really cute. Talk about coincidence. Yeah, right. Right on the corner I used to sleep on, here they built this little junior college, and that's where Robin had to go. Or else. So I went, kicking and screaming, and they had a guy with a hook right by the door, because every other day I was running out the door telling them what they could do with their school and everybody in it. He would just hook me and pull me back in, you know. And took me 2.5 years, but I got my little AA degree in liberal arts. And I'd go around with this piece of paper. You know, while I was in the workshop, down the street, there used to be a little place called Triarco Arts and Crafts. And the psychologist said to me, or told them, a counselor, he said, send him down there. Put him to do something with his hands. He seems creative. You figure it out. I couldn't. I didn't even know what my name was at that point. So it didn't matter. So I went, and I took 4 2-hour lessons in macrame. You all know what macrame is? From years, 1,000 years ago, but that's all right. You have heard of it. It's the mariner's art of tying knots, okay? And you make plant hangers and little owls and all kinds of... I mean, real goofy shit, you know, but... Hey. While I was tying the knots in the rope, I was untying the knots of the air. So don't knock it. Don't knock it. And so that happened. That was another step in the right direction. And you know, when I say don't knock it, there was this guy. He waited till I had 3 years in the program, and he came up to me and said, Robin, it kind of looks like you're going to make it. And I looked at him and I said, oh, tell me more, which I knew he was going to anyway. He says, yeah. He says, I saw you once out on the street. He says, you are disgusting. You were in a doorway. You had your pants leg rolled up so that your wine sores would show. He says, I was so disgusted, I spit on you. I said, don't knock it, Buster. I made a lot of money that way. He was so horrified, he went running out the room. I said, good, because otherwise I would have told him to take his hand, fold it 4 ways, and then shove it. I'm going to shake your hand, he said. Don't bother with me. I mean, I think that's kind of neat. So, you know, sobriety, I'm going to tell you what they did with me. When they took the alcohol away from me, that's the only person I can talk about, they left this huge hole, you know. At that time, it was only 145 pounds. Now it's almost 200. So, with the steps, you gave me something to fill that hole up with. Positives, you know. Which sounded so corny when I first heard it, I thought I'd throw up. And I did throw up a lot in those days, but... The bottom line is this, that we managed to make it somehow, and... While we're talking about throwing up, I'll throw in something else I just remembered. This is totally scrambled because I don't prepare anything. I kind of, you won't believe this, but when I come to one of these rooms and a bunch of beautiful people like you, you're really telling me what you need to hear, so it's coming out and I don't, you know, you either like it or else, you know, there's the door, you know. I tell that to everybody and they think I'm crazy, but you know, that's what they told me, and they didn't tell me just once, they told me many, many times, because I did not want to get it, and so I keep repeating what I heard in the beginning. So anyway, I already forgot what I was going to say, so we'll go on to something else. You know. Couldn't have been too important. If I remember, I'll go back to it, but right now, let's go back to the school. Somebody needs to hear this. I know. I can feel it. So, we got through with our little AA degree, and I thought, well, that's it. I'm out of here. But they did have a little, it's a junior college, and they just had their commencement exercise in a room like this. I think it was a cafeteria or something. And so we went through the whole schmear, and they made us get caps and gowns and all that. And I thought, what am I doing here? So what happens? We're getting in line and everything, and this kid says to me, he says, Robin, who's standing up for you? I said, standing up for me? This is honest Injun. This really happened. And I said, what do you mean standing up for me? He says, family, Dodo. I said, family. I said, wait a minute. I'll be right back. And I went flying out on the street. Truman College is right on Wilson Avenue, Skid Row on the north side. And here's Richard DeWino. And there's the street social worker, okay? And so I ran up to her and I said, you are my sister. Pull that skirt down. And you are my brother. And I said, don't let him pull that jug out in there. So I got him to go in there. And sure enough, when they called my name, Richard reached out and pulled out the jug and said, yay, Robin. And I was so embarrassed I wanted to die, but I had family. And she managed to keep her skirt down, so it was okay. These are things that you cannot duplicate, people. And I'm sure every one of you has equal or worse things in your past that you don't like to talk about or probably don't. I don't give a good, because like I said, this is what got me here. Every split second was necessary. The good, the bad, the indifferent, the horrible, the depraved, the unbelievable stuff that I did. You don't want to know. I wouldn't abuse you by telling you what I have done for just a drink. So, anyway, when I came into these rooms and I kept whining and every time I heard that word, G-O-D, I would scream and run to the nearest John or out to the nearest exit and heave my guts out. Why? It wasn't the word. It was what the word had been pounded into my head as meaning. And I thought, well, if there really is one of these around here somewhere, maybe hiding in that room, and this thing really, really knows everything that Robin has really, really done, even that stuff out there in the dark, forget it. He doesn't want to have nothing to do with me, and I don't want to have nothing to do with him, and that's okay with me, because he can just go his way, I'll go my way, never the twain shall meet, next step, please, in all my grandeur, Didn't know shit, but I was that demanding that they let me graduate to the next step. This elder got a hold of me, slammed me into a chair and says, you no good rotten piece of shit. He says, we are so sick of listening to your moaning and groaning and your belly aching. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. Why don't you just shut up and listen and listen and listen some more. And when you're so sick of listening, you want to throw up, listen some more. Asshole. I was so shocked I had no choice but to listen some more, And he says, you know what? If you really don't like that word, G-O-D, why don't you just say good orderly direction? If you're from Missouri and you got to be shown, why don't you say group of drunks? They're there. They're real. You can touch them, feel them, smell them. They're there. If that's not good enough for you, why don't you say, hey, you out there, if you are there, the girls are like this, how about he, she, or it, to whom it may concern? Nowhere, angel children, nowhere in all the literature that's been printed by AA are you going to find a description, a graphic description of G-O-D. There is none. Doesn't say he's tall, short, male, female, three heads, two to five legs, whatever. No, it doesn't say anything like that. And you're wondering, well, how does he know all that? Well, I'm going to tell you, it was pointed out to me, and I'm so stupid, everything had to be word by word. It says there on the board, G-O-D, and then it's so important, there's four more words. Underscored because they're so important, and I didn't see them. I thought G-O-D, and I said, that's it, I'm out of here. As we understood him. If you don't like him, her. If you don't like her, it. If you don't like that, fake it till you make it. Pretend it's this. And if you don't want any of that, if there's anyone here tonight that says, that person up there is not going to force me to believe in anything, I could give two shits what you believe in. I have enough trouble believing in what I believe in. But I'm going to tell you something. You better, if you are really sitting here and you're trying to tell me telepathically that you don't believe in anything at all, and I'm not going to force you, I'm going to have to ask you one very simple question. What are you doing here then? Think about that. If you really, really don't believe in this room, in these people, in those 12 suggested steps, the traditions, everything that comprises Alcoholics Anonymous, what are you doing here? I'm talking to the people that are friends of Bill W., okay? If you're guests, you're just going to have to put up with me. That's fine. If you are a beginner, and I'm a beginner every day of my life, I have to ask you one very simple question. Never mind doing 12 steps in 1 week. Never mind graduating and going on to bigger and better things. I tell beginners, you know, it's very simple. I mean, make up your mind very simply this. Do you want to live? Or do you want to die? It doesn't get any simpler than that. That's all you have to concern yourself in the beginning. Do you want to live or do you want to die? Whatever your decision, I will honor it. And if death is what you choose, I'll buy you the first one. People have tried me and they were very surprised when I... Here we go. That's what they did to me. They said, don't waste our time, and we won't waste yours. You either want it or you don't. Go. You're not strapped in those chairs. There's no glue in them. Go. Sometimes I went, sometimes I stayed. Sometimes I went, most of the times I went, but that last time around, I was really so sick and tired of being sick. Sick and tired of being oh so sick and oh so tired of just being sick and so I stuck my ass in that chair and I stayed there and you paid for it ever since, you know. But the bottom line is this, I'm here today to tell you that as long as there's life, there is hope. If you're going crazy over the steps, don't. If you're a beginner and everybody's telling you, well, you got to do a four step, you got to do, but tell them to go take a flying jump at the moon. Tell them Robin said, if you don't do anything else but the first half of the first step for the first year, you're going to be fine. How can I say that? Well, it's very simple. I just said it because that's the way I practiced it. You know, I couldn't do all the things you wanted me to do. It had to be little tiny baby steps. Sometimes backwards, sometimes forward, sometimes sideways. And then there was the days when I'd just sit down and say, I'll never move again. But then I'd get up, dust myself off, and just keep on trucking. It's where am I right here, right now? And where do I go from this moment forward, not backward? When I got through with Truman College, the next logical step was Northeastern Illinois University, because it was a state college also. And I said, this is insane. And I said, I can't do this. I can't do this. I mean, It's painful. That first little 80 degrees, that was the most painful experience of my life. Anybody that tells you it's easy is full of it. And tell them, I said so too. And anyway, the bottom line is this, that screaming again, those Pell Grants, I wish they'd blown up or something, because they paid for it, and away I went, and there I am, walking up and down the aisles and the corridors of Northeastern, and don't ask me how, don't ask me what. But I finished. Took me 8 years, 8 years, because I was keeping body and soul during the day, together, and then I was going to school half-time at night. Okay? And the way I was keeping body and soul together, remember I told you about those plane hangers? When I made my first plane hanger, I went around to all the clinics and all the hospitals where I was a patient at while I was out there, and I said, I made this. I made this. Dinky little piece of, you know, whatever. And they said, Robin, you what? I said, I made this. He made that. We want five of them, please. I think I was charging something like $3 or something. And so, man, I'd run back to that little place where I'd get the cord, and I'd buy a bunch of cord and start making more of those things. And that's how I was keeping body and soul together, was doing all this crazy macrame shit, you know. But all the time that I was doing it, this, you know, they say that alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Let me tell you, the person who drinks it, male or female, becomes cunning, baffling, and powerful. And of course, with my street experience, my dears, I turned that into con, bullshit, and manipulation. And boy, could I manipulate you or not? And so I made it, one way or the other. I didn't have to do the things I used to do, but I made it, you know. So here I am, going to school during at night, half time at night, and I got my Bachelor of Science. Not in art. Everybody thinks I went to school for art. No, I didn't know what art was. I literally did not know what art was. What do I know? He said, put him to do something with his hands. He seems creative. I don't know where the hell he saw that, but that's how it started. And so I got my Bachelor of Science in psychology. And so that was that. And remember, I started this, I didn't sober up until I was 45, okay? And I think all of this school bullshit started somewhere 47. So, and you add 8 years to that, so it was 50. No, don't add, okay? I just remembered. I told you I was 39, didn't I? Yeah. All right. Anyway, we went through all that shit and we got it and everything else. This time, no commencement exercise. Because I thought, no, I'm not going through that shit again. You know, I went down to the registrar's office. I said, give me that damn diploma. She says, geez, you don't have to be so mean about it. I said, just give it to me. I'm out of here. And I went screaming out the door, swearing I would never, ever set foot in a learning institution again as long as I live. Then that little voice. Come on, Robin, you've gone this far. One more little turn of the screw. I said, screw you know. I couldn't believe it. So I was being bugged so badly, I called up those scholarship people. I said, you don't pay for graduate work, do you? No, we don't. I said, thank you. And I was ready to hang up. She says, wait. She says, pick wherever you want to go, and we will guarantee a student loan. I don't believe this. I really don't believe this. I really don't believe this. Apparently not. Believe it or not, I'm in the honor roll or whatever you call it. Don't ask me how. Don't ask me how. Because to this day, I have no idea. Literally no idea. I remember I couldn't read because I'd try to read a paragraph 30 times and not one word would register. So I'd sit on the first row, look at the teacher, read their lips, and make notes like crazy, you know. And I guess that's the way I did it, because that's the only thing I can think of. So, Robin, God is masters in human service, all right? Now, let me tell you something. This is the same rhino, the same derelict that the cops wouldn't pick up, that the medical and psychiatric profession said, let the son of a bitch die. This is the same rhino. What does this tell you? It tells you very simply this, or it tells me, as long as there's life, there's hope. As long as there's life, there's hope. And what else does it tell me? Well, you know, it tells me that somehow, by not taking a drink one day at a time, I was able to do whatever it took to get all this stuff together. So, I got my master's, and I didn't know what to do then. So, it was all in preparing me. I thought I was going to become the penultimate guidance specialist in alcohol and substance abuse, and I don't know what else kind of titles I was adding on to it. And here is, now I don't know about your higher power, if you have one, he, she, or it. I don't know about yours, but mine has a very caustic sense of humor. When I got all of this shit together and I had those three pieces of paper, you know where I put them? You know where the potty is and you sit down? On this wall, right here. And every time I sat down on the potty, I'd look over there and I'd say, not bad for the rhino from Skid Row. People would go in there and they'd come out and they'd say, Robin, what are those pieces of paper? Are they real? I said, yes, you're damn right they're real. That's 8 years of my life, or 11 years. No, 11 years of my life after the bastard. And they said, well, why haven't you got them in there? I said, so I can talk to them when I'm sitting on the potty. I said, that's when I talk to my higher power. Why can't I talk to them? You know. You never talk to your higher power when you're sitting on the potty? That's the best time, you know. Hey, mine's a swinger. He has to be to put up with my shit, you know. He doesn't care if I'm standing, kneeling, or dressed, undressed, on the potty, or out in the middle of the street, or chasing someone through the bushes. He doesn't care. As long as I, you know. You know, that's the one hotline that's never busy, you know. All I have to do is pick up the phone and he's there. Of course, all he says is, no, not yet, maybe tomorrow, maybe next day. You know, when I first came around, people, I always used to hear, you know, and you know what caused all of this to happen, since we're on the G-O-D word again? This is really neat, and I only found this out recently because I, for whatever reason. Everybody in the beginning used to look at me and say, oh, there but for the grace. Oh, did you? I said, who the hell is Grace, you know? I said, Jesus, I gotta meet this broad. Oh, I know. So, come to find out, and this is so magical, was that I found out what grace means, what it really means. And it is so magical because it hits the nail right on the head for moi. Maybe not for you, but for moi it does. Grace is the completely undeserved mercy and favor of G-O-D. As you understand it, as I understand it, as we all understand it, which means right here, right now in this room, there's as many G.O.D.s as there are people. And it's okay. Not because I said so. It says up there on the thing. As we understood him. And all you have to know is that it isn't you. And that's what got me. But let me tell you something, it's very hard to accept a G-O-D or an H-P into your life when you are sitting square in the middle of the throne. Or do you call it the driver's seat, or do you call it the director's chair? He looks like a director, yeah, okay. And so, I mean, whatever you call it, you ain't it. And as long as you can remember that, you're going to be okay. It can be a light bulb, a tree, the group. We had a girl, she had a chair, she called it Alfred. It worked. And furthermore, you know, one of the other blessings that this program has given me anyway, aside from sobriety, first the program. Now remember, that's the sequence. First the program. Then my higher power. Because without the program, I would have never found anything. Anything at all. Nothing. I used to eat out of dumpsters. I mean, I was an animal. I had no qualms about eating garbage. And if you were to wipe your feet on me, I would roll over and let you do it on the other side. That's what I thought of. Lower than West. And now comes the program, then comes G-O-D, H-P, whatever you want to call him. And now another little boom. Listen, Robin does not mind being alone with Robin anymore. If that isn't a blessing, I don't know what the hell is. So just sit there and think about how bad things are for you. You ingrate you, you know? Think, where was I when I came crawling through that door? And where am I? Right here, right now. And if you don't see any difference, I'll do the same for you as I'll do for those other people. I'll take you out there and buy you the first one and you can go on your merry way. If you don't really see any difference, what are you doing here? If you don't believe in anything, what are you doing here? Again, back to the joy of living. They said, don't drink, go to meetings, read the big book, talk to your sponsor, and you will know the joy of living. And I'm thinking, wow. And it also said somewhere, you know, everything you need is right there inside of you. And the joy of living is right there inside of you too. If you will just look inward instead of outward. I mean, I came in thinking a lot of those crazy thoughts. I thought as soon as I sober up, and then I'm going to make money, then there's the diamonds, the furs, and the Cadillac cars, and all that other happy horse manure. Well, believe it or not, in little tiny bits and pieces, I got all of that. And it didn't mean to me nothing. And today it means even less. Even less. I have a lot less today than I did a while back, but that's by choice. I mean, if I wanted to pursue this stuff for this, you know, remember when I was telling you about the knottings and untying the knots in my head, and I kept saying I want to do more than tie knots, I want to do stuff. So the brain would say, okay, well, why don't you try this, and why don't you try that, and why don't you try the other thing, and today, Robin has public artworks and three major voices, and I go by, and literally, you're not going to believe this. It's kind of silly, but it's true. I'll go in there, and I'll peek around the corner just to see if it's real and if it's still there. It is. It's there. And it's got my name on it, and I don't believe it. Then I get the hell out of there, because it scares the shit out of me. And it's mine. Now I do this real weavings and encased in acrylic and all that other heavy. I mean, the galleries love them, but I won't give them to them because I don't want them to have them. And anyway, this is another one of my little quirks, but you know, it's there and it was all given to me by you know, because I sure as shit didn't know anything about that when I came in. I didn't have nothing. I didn't know anything about life. I didn't know anything about people. I didn't know anything about anything. But the program says, you know, I keep thinking, you know, of all the things you know, sobriety has not been easy. I don't know about you, but life on life's terms can be a bitch sometimes. I have had things happen in sobriety, physical, you know, things that started way back when and are now manifesting themselves now. And it's kind of scary sometimes, but somehow or other, 1999, I finally looked up and I said to him, "Hey, why don't you go find somebody else to play with? Leave me alone, you know?" But I lived through it. I lived through it, and it was fine, and it was fine. But this is what you told me all along, and I didn't believe you. And, you know, I can have as much as I want, as little as I want, or none if I want. And the bottom line has got to be always, how much of me am I willing to give to get, you know? And some days it's 150%, some days it's nothing. And it's as much as I want to give, that's what I'm going to get in return. And, you know, my mother, God rest her soul, she was a beautiful woman, very tall. Well, she was tall for a woman, 5'8". But she had this propensity to get dressed up in orange heels and slinky dresses and go out at night. And so, you know, she was a beautiful, beautiful lady of the night when she was drinking. When she was sober, she was a perfect housekeeper. I couldn't even walk on the floor. And she'd be perfectly dressed and clean and everything, and I'd run up to her and, "Don't touch me, you'll mess up my dress. Go sit down over there." But when she had a drink, goodbye Charlie. And, well, that went on and on in her life, and at age 43, I believe it was, she finally got tired of it, and she fixed herself a cocktail and put rat poison in it. Now, you see, this was her way of doing it. And a lot of people say it's a coward's way out. No. It's the highest form of self-criticism, that's for sure, but... you know what you just gave me? You just gave it to me. The most beautiful thing that we have here besides sobriety and GODs and HPs and all that other crap. Laughter. Laughter. We can laugh with each other instead of at each other, and we can laugh about things that were life and death, literally, when they happened. Now we can look back and laugh. You weren't laughing at my mother, you were laughing at the idea of what we can do. And that's so beautiful. Where, you know, it is unbelievable. Do you ever stop and think about it? Do you ever stop and think about it? All of the money in the world cannot buy one split second of what we get in these rooms for free. All you got to do is show up and sit your ass down, pull all that earwax out, and start listening some more. And when you're so sick of listening, you want to throw up, listen some more. And it works. It works. It works, you know. God, it's the joy of living. Have you ever heard people, "Oh, happy, joyous, and free"? And I think, yeah, right, what planet are you on, you know? I mean, let's face it. I mean, my feet are very firmly on terra firma because... that happy, joyous, and free stuff kind of scares me. The joy of living is kind of okay to me because you said that's what you'll get if you work the program. And I think whoever said it, I don't know. You know, I don't know any more about the book than anyone else. I really don't because, I mean, that's why I have a big book meeting because that's the only way I can learn. And, so anyway, they told me that if I just keep coming back, it would work. Even for me, it would work. Even for me, it would work. And so I did. I believed them, and here I am. But you know what? It hasn't been easy, and nobody promised me a rose garden. And no matter how much we kick and scream and squall and carry on, and I could throw myself in the middle of that floor and hold my breath till I turn blue, everything is going to keep right on going the way it wants to go on going, whether I like it or not. And things happen that I don't understand, that I scream and squall about, but yet invariably he, she, or it throws me the answers as I go further down the road. And then I realize, okay, now I understand why that happened, and I can see the benefits thereof working in my life. My mother, in her suicide, left a message for all of us. It's very simply, it don't work. It don't work. And if you think you've got the answer, and if you think you can go out there and do it for one night and quit, be my guest. Go! Like I said, I'll buy you the first one. I'm not going. A lot of people have been talking recently about having another, you know, drunk. Well, I know I have another drunk. But when I think of what it took for me to get here, no. No, no, no. And what I'm really afraid of is not the dying part, it's the living part. I might live. I don't know if you've ever been in one of those places where they have the Korsakoff syndromes, the geeks, the wet brains. Ooh, that's a pretty picture. Go look sometime. I was in there with them. Not nice. And, you know, and it's amazing. And here I am, here you are, here we all are. And the thing that I'm really, really most amazed about is this has all happened in my life against my will. I would love to tell you that I cooperated every inch of the way. I haven't. I fought tooth and nail in sobriety. I mean, I'm just, you know, what do you expect? I'm half Cherokee and half German, you know. It's kind of a mixed up bag there, but here I am. So anyway, let's get enough of this stuff. Back to where we were, which is, you know, people asking how it works and expecting you to come up with the answers and all that stuff. I always try to say to them, you know, the thing that was taught to me was that, you know, I can have, again, as much as I want or as little as I want. And again, here we go. If you go out there, one of the things that you hear, I hear it is. They told me, you know what, try to do this. Instead of, you know, existing, try to live, you know. Live. Don't exist. Listen. Don't just hear. And not only hear, try to understand. Try to understand that the joy of living is not out there somewhere. Again, it's right there inside each and every one of you. You want to know what the joy of living really is? I'm going to tell you what it really is. The joy of living is sharing your own hard-earned, painful, freeing experience, strength, and hope with someone less fortunate than yourself. That is the joy of living. That's why the program says, pass it on. Carry the message, whatever you've got, to someone less fortunate than yourself. And you know, when you leave here tonight, and you go out there, and somebody runs up to you by chance and asks you, how does it work? How does it work? How does it work? I want you to tell them for me. I want you to tell them for me. Don't take a drink one day at a time. Get your ass to one of these damned old meetings. Say one word. health in the morning, true words, thank you at night. And I don't give a shit if you've just had a day, Federal Express, straight from the pits of hell, where everything you touch turned to you know what. Tonight, when your head hits that pillow, if you haven't had a drink or any other mood-altering substance, I want you to say thank you, because at that moment, you are a winner, a miracle, a living, breathing power of example, and no one can take that away from you, except you. God bless you and thank you.